Hi. So this past April and May, I had the honor of walking on the Pilgrimage for Indigenous Rights, which was a 600-kilometer walk from Kitchener to Ottawa in support of Bill C-262. We walked to teach churches and communities along the way about Bill C-262. We walked in the hope that Canada will adopt and implement the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We walked to heal hurting relationships. We walked to heal ourselves. First, some facts. The United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, or UNDRIP, lays out the bare minimum standards for the rights of Indigenous peoples. It was adopted in 2007, after about 25 years in the making by the United Nations. And at that time, four countries, including Canada, voted against UNDRIP. Four countries who had a lot of vested interest in not protecting the rights of Indigenous peoples. While Canada has since gone and removed our objector status, we still have yet to fully adopt and implement UNDRIP into law, which is where Bill C-262 comes in. It's a private member's bill written by Romeo Saganash, and it goes into the second reading in September, and it provides the legal framework to correct Canada's mistakes. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission spent 7 years completing their final report, which was released in 2015, and there are 94 calls to action on ways that Canada can do better in their relationship with Indigenous peoples. And within those 94 calls to action, UNDRIP is mentioned 16 times at least. Articles 43 and 44 call for the adoption and implementation of UNDRIP by Canadian government, and Articles 48 and 49 call for church action, which includes compliance with, dialogue on, and implementation of UNDRIP. And the TRC also calls for the rejection of the doctrine of discovery. This was a doctrine which was created by the church back in the 1500s, which stated that land occupied by pagans was free land, it was unoccupied, and the church could take it over. And this ideology was what began over 500 years of settler colonial occupation of Indigenous land and genocide of Indigenous peoples, which is still ongoing today. So responding to all of this can be overwhelming at best. Returning the land and people to their original state, pre-colonialism, is impossible. Yet continuing on the current violent path of Indigenous rights violations should be unthinkable for humanity in general. And as Christians, people following Jesus' teachings of nonviolence and justice for those who've been shoved to the margins, we also have a specific moral imperative to respond in a good way. However, we still need to be careful. For too long, settlers, and namely white settlers, have presumed to be the authority over all of human experience. And we need to make sure that our response is respectful to Indigenous people's sovereignty and autonomy and comes from a place of listening to what they are saying. So part of that is the UN Declaration. It's a beautiful document which affirms the foundational and universal rights of Indigenous peoples in areas including but not limited to land, governance, spirituality, health, education, language, and economics. And I thought I would read a few of the articles for you to hear what this bill and UNDRIP are trying to implement into Canadian law. Article 3 states that Indigenous peoples have the right to self-determination. By virtue of that right, they freely determine their political status and freely pursue their economic, social, and cultural development. Article 10 says that Indigenous peoples shall not be forcibly removed from their lands or territories. No relocation shall take place without the free, prior, and informed consent of the Indigenous peoples concerned, and after agreement on just and fair compensation, and where possible, with the option of return. Article 13 says that Indigenous peoples have the right to revitalize, use, develop, and transmit to future generations their histories, languages, oral traditions, philosophies, writing systems, and literatures, and to designate and retain their own names for communities, places, and persons. States shall take effective measures to ensure that this right is protected, and also to ensure that Indigenous peoples can understand and be understood in political, legal, and administrative proceedings, where necessary through the provision of interpretation or by other appropriate means. Now, these articles use a lot of really big words, and part of what we did during the pilgrimage was we committed to memorizing the Declaration as a collective. We didn't all memorize all 46 articles, but we each would memorize one or two articles and carry them together. And while the words are big, they carry very fundamental rights that Indigenous peoples are sovereign nations. They existed before settlers came. The land was not empty, and their knowledge was equally valid and carried their societies. They hold that Indigenous peoples have the right to be in their land, and that it is wrong to remove them forcibly from that land, or take that land away from them, or do things to the land without their consent. It says that they have the right to their languages. These languages were often taken away from them through residential schools, where they are forced to speak English, and their oral traditions were discounted in favor of Western knowledge. And so these are really difficult things to grapple with as a church, where we believe in verses that say, love one another as I have loved you, or everyone among you ought not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but to respond with humbleness. And this has not been reflected in our history with Indigenous peoples. So the Declaration requires a significant shift in relationship between two nations. It requires some major sacrifices of power on the part of Canada, but it requires sacrificing power which was forcibly taken and violently enforced. It requires upsetting an imbalance of power that keeps all people, Indigenous people, white settlers, and people of color who have a very complex relationship with the Indigenous settler relationship, from living fully. Maya Angelou's belief that no one of us can be free until everybody is free was repeated many times on the pilgrimage, especially by Dr. Pat McCokis. She's from Saddle Lake Cree Nation in Alberta, and she was walking for the first half of the pilgrimage, and she just had so many great words. I wish I could share them all with you, because her words hold a lot of power. She says, Western education has indoctrinated people to believe that we are awful, and we are not awful. When you ask yourself, what is decolonization? Ask yourself, what do I know about Indigenous people? Because you probably hold a lot of stereotypes. We can't do the work until we do the work in ourselves. I had to decolonize myself. If I had to decolonize myself as a Cree woman, then you probably do too. We cannot see universities and the church as up here and Indigenous peoples down here. We have to see them as equal. We need to incorporate Indigenous knowledge because then we will all benefit. And this idea of all benefit, that this is a broken relationship which places the heaviest burden on Indigenous peoples, but that is very much a source of mutual pain that we just might not see or we choose to ignore, was a common theme of the pilgrimage. And so McCokis shared these words often on the pilgrimage, that it is time to stop prioritizing Western settler views at the expense of Indigenous worldviews. And this can be really hard to hear as someone who is in a university setting and likes the scientific method and has all of these different ways in which my beliefs have been formed throughout my life, to sit back and listen and say, oh, but this is the same. Your belief systems have done the same for you that mine have for me, and maybe I'm missing some things that I could learn from you. And her words reminded me again of the passage in Romans, which we read earlier together. But where it was saying that we all have different gifts and that we can't just all have one gift, that we aren't as strong when that happens. We become poorer when we lose out on each other's knowledge. But it's easy to forget this when we hold the power. We hold power as a society, but we also hold power as individuals based on factors such as age, jobs, the color of our skin, our abilities, our gender identities, and so much more. And even though we may idealize these verses where it says that everyone among you is to not think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. It is really, really hard to do those things when doing them means that we have to give up some of that power. That requires sacrifice that Jesus modeled and that uplifts and amplifies those on the margins. Kelly Dvorak was another walker on the pilgrimage, and she said that reconciliation as a country is difficult because it is difficult for us as individuals. So reconciliation on the small scale is necessary for reconciliation on the large scale. And her words really stuck with me through the pilgrimage, as well as the words of Philip, who was a man that we met early on. He was a pastor from India who was saying that he did not feel heard, that because of the color of his skin, he was expected to always be the one receiving the knowledge. He could never give the knowledge, even though he had at least as much to give. And he said, with Indigenous people, how can we listen to the water if we don't listen to them? And now to get off of this really, somber path that we're on, that was a connection that I noticed, again, on the pilgrimage, this connection to land. Mennonites and people all around the world, it's not just Mennonites and it's not just Indigenous people, many cultures hold a tie to the land, but Indigenous people hold this incredible connection to land that I think we can learn a lot from. It's land viewed as being completely equal to people. Pat McCokas said that the worms aren't less than me, they are my relatives. If she would take anything from nature, she would offer tobacco and thank the earth. And it just is a beautiful model to learn from in how we relate to the land. She said, when Indigenous people are praying and doing pipe ceremonies, we are doing it for all of us because there is only one Mother Earth. We will then start to privilege the knowledge that was here first that connects us all to the land. If you went back to your roots, you'd also find a tribal system. Now is the time to undo the shackles which hold all of us. At one point, the Indigenous people were living on the land, and now the corporations are making money off the land, and Indigenous people are the poorest people. And it just strikes me that these verses which say to live in harmony with one another, do not be haughty, do not claim to be wiser than you are, that is something that we've done a lot. And they're hard things to grapple with. Even along the pilgrimage, I was challenged to look within myself and see biases I hold or areas of power I really would hesitate to give up. I really enjoy going camping, but when we look at Indigenous land sovereignty, what does that mean for national parks? What it changes the way that the land is maybe allocated, but it allocates it in a more fair way when 0.2% of the land is held by the people who are originally living here. That's a crime. It's violence against that land and against the people. I also had to give up of my skepticism of things like cedar's medicinal properties. And I at first thought, oh, okay, sure. But realized as we went that it was a source of a really good medicine for people along the way. And that it was the things that I had been taught growing up that were getting in the way of seeing that. The stereotypes that I've picked up in Canadian media through all of my years, these were all things that I had to really look at. And instead of getting lost in shame, to look at for the truth that I was seeing in front of me and the people and relationships that I was making along the way. Leah Gazan, who's a Lakota woman who walked with us a lot of the way, said, she said that guilt is a very self-absorbed emotion because you feel bad and you put the onus on others to comfort you. They didn't go, oh, I'm so sorry. They were just friends. First, we need to see everyone as human beings. We are all equal in this circle. We all have a place here. Laughter is a way of healing. Chill out. Because we could get pretty serious when, as you're trying to grapple with all of this. And her words are words that I am trying to carry with me today. The relationships that I formed on the pilgrimage helped to heal some of that shame and calm some of my fears and help me to chill out. And so I invite all of us to, yes, think about the ways that we are complicit in systems of violence, but also to look with joy towards the future and say, how can we be in a better relationship? How can we learn from each other? How can we respect the land, respect people, respect each other, and live peaceably with all? Thank you.